Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm recording now, mate. Don't worry about it.
What, you've been recording now?
Yeah. This is what sort of intro do you think I'm going to do? It's just going to be...
The thing is, you always let us go in half-cocked. I'm not ready. You're having a big old slurpy of tea. Is that what you think that the audience wants to hear? They want to hear on the UBP, UBP. They want to hear just...
I could have done a way more of a slurp. No, you're having a little bit of a slurp now because they can't see you.
Because you're talking. You're talking like a slurp. I'm slurping away.
It's a beautiful partnership. So, yeah, this is one of the last UBPs we'll be able to do of 2020.
Although, UBP, Jules, I think, UBP, UBP, UBP.
I think you are around next Friday, I believe, for one.
I am. Unfortunately, I'm working the graveyard shift, so I'll be here until Christmas Eve.
Oh, sweet Lord. I'm here. My last day is next Friday, so we'll do one more UBP.
You are out of there. You are a ghost, mate. You're that cartoon Acme shadow, you know?
I'm walking out the door. I'm going to go into the room that's next to me, the same thing I've been doing at the end of every shift. But yeah, Cyberpunk 2077 happened this week, and we thought rather than do the usual sort of scattershot questions in relation to dippy eggs and whatever, so what we think of chicken nuggets and stuff, that we would just dive into all things Cyberpunk. So we asked for different questions. You've played the PC version. That was the version that we reviewed. Indeed.
Just as a disclaimer, by the way, before we begin this, because I know that there are a lot of people who are playing on different consoles and stuff like that, I reviewed the game that I was sent in the format that I was. I had no way of understanding or playing any other console version. Mm-hmm. I had the PC version. It was supported very well through launch. I only experienced a few aesthetic glitches, but nothing game breaking. So my review, I stand by it. As an experience, it's fantastic, and we'll go into that later. But
The difference between the PC version and the ones that are being rightfully dragged right now, as in the PS4 and the Xbox One version, is night and day. Yeah. It's very clear that the PC version and the next gen versions are going to be the best version of this, which is CDPR even noted during development that as soon as next gen consoles were on the horizon, they started to pivot towards that. And you can kind of tell that they've made something for, you know, what is now the current gen, PS5, Xbox Series, and PC, and then they've had to make it work on the old stuff. And it just, you can tell. Really,
you definitely can tell. I mean, I watched a YouTuber stream the game on PlayStation 5, and it was like 4K, 60 frames per second. I didn't even see some of the graphical issues that I'd experienced. So I was like, damn, this is like, this is like better than the version I'm playing. Yeah, and then I went and watched a person play the PS4 version, and I was like, oh, okay, like I'm in two minds, and I know that we'll go into this with one of the questions, but I'm in two minds as to whether or not I would have even greenlit that to begin with. It's like, I might as well have done, like, if I was in charge, for example, I'm not saying I should be by any means, but I would probably do almost like a reverse of what we saw with Grand Theft Auto 5. I would have basically started off with the version that worked on the higher end stuff, and then a year later rolled out the version that would work on the other consoles, because obviously GTA 5 did it where it came out on the PS3 and Xbox 360 or whatever, and then wasn't as it was then patched in with all the other stuff when it hit the next gen consoles.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating, because I think at some point we'll get some sort of deep dive, you know, like Jason Schreier type person, or maybe Jeff Grubb or something, will do some sort of deep dive thing on just what the reality of its development was across the 8 years. Like, what were they initially aiming for? Because it predates the PS4 and the Xbox One and everything. And it's fascinating, because I just think if you've done this marketing spin for years and years and years, saying like, look, we're going to go with the PS4, we're going to go with the Xbox One, and then and there's so many millions of people have have those systems. So you kind of quote unquote have to, because you've said you will, and but clearly you know they know, or they knew that this version of the game wasn't good enough. Like it looks terrible on there. On the Xbox One S, it's pretty much a flip book. Like the frame rate is horrible.
Well, we weren't even offered a review code that wasn't for PC.
No,
it was
no
only way. For PC. And then as soon as it was, the review period was up and all of the pre-orders and stuff were in, that's when they offered us another console code.
So it's, yeah. So to throw in some people's questions, because most of the questions that we got were just around the state of it.
Yeah,
the
sure.
state of the launch and the fact that they restricted access to the console codes, even the second embargo, because we were following the PC review embargo. The second embargo was that you could upload your capture, but it could only be from the PC version. So they literally hit the console versions from everybody. They did a Bethesda.
They did, and if it was any other company, they would have raked across the coals.
Which we sort of, me and Josh did the this game is on fire on PS4 and Xbox One.
We did
really well, and a lot of people got in touch to say, like, oh, thank you very much for saying this, because it doesn't feel like most other outlets are saying this in such stark terms. But I'm like, dude, like, it's fair. Like, if this was Bethesda, if this was 2K, Activision, EA, we would be dragging them, like you said. And so I think it's worth pointing it out.
What I really hate the most of this is the fact that because of the strange divergence of quality between the version that we reviewed and the one that is out there that the majority of people will have, because let's face it, the install base for PS4 and Xbox Series is going to be much higher than it is going to be for the newest generation.
One.
Like Sorry, the, Xbox yeah, One, yeah. yeah. It's going to be much higher than it is for the new consoles. So I feel that it undermines the relationship between a publisher and review outlet when you have moments like this, because it's a symbiotic thing. They rely on us for positive praise and to get advertising and to push it out to our followers, and it's like hundreds of thousands more eyes on the product than would have not been if they hadn't sent out those codes. But at the same time, we rely on them because it's like about legitimacy, it's about building up a credibility thing. And when stuff like this happens, when I'm sitting there going, the version that I played was brilliant and I'm still playing it and I absolutely love it, and I get somebody next to me who's saying, well, I pre-ordered this on a console version based on your recommendation, and it doesn't live up to what you said. I'm like,
you did say at the start of the review, like, we did outline the embargo details, like we always have, like saying, look, this is what they've done. We have the PC version, like, you know, we're waiting on the console footage, etc.
But that gets lost in the hype. Sometimes they get a lot, and you can get people that are just like, well, I pre-ordered it based on your positive, like, notes on it, and I expected to get the version that you got. And I hate being able to say, you're not going to get that. That doesn't seem right in this day and age.
It's annoying.
You're not going to get the same game that I played.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, if you want to look at how night and day it is, Digital Foundry have a version of the PC version running on the highest specs possible on Earth right now, and that thing looks absolutely stunning. And you mentioned before the PS5 one running in 4K 60, it tries. It has a whole bunch of different graphical effects you can turn off to get the picture to be clearer, but it never actually hits 4K. It's a variable. It's just weird, but they're getting there with it. But obviously if you play it on PS5, you're still playing the PS4 one natively, like, you know, automatically upscaled because it's on the PS5, versus the actual PS5 version, which will be out in 2021.
It's such a
weird rollout. But there was a lot of people sort of asking, like, should they just have cancelled the last gen versions? And SGC was saying, should we hold out hope that they'll fix the PS4 one? I don't think so. I just don't see how for me, like, CDPR are an incredible anomaly because they are developers and publishers in one. They only really answer to the shareholders, and they've lost billions of dollars already, like, in delaying the game. And so in that all-out creative mentality means that you don't put limits on yourself and you keep reaching and you keep reaching, and, you know, it's an 8-year development. And so if new consoles came around, then it's like, well, we can push fidelity even more. We can make an even bigger world. We can make this stuff even more detailed and stuff like that. And I think at some point that kind of got away from them, and they've made this big, like, you know, kind of unwieldy, crazy thing that runs pretty well on a PC and a PS5 and an Xbox Series. But it is, I don't know, I don't feel like it's possible to make it work on the last gen stuff because they left that
pushing it
like years ago.
Yeah, it's really, really pushing it. I'm in two minds whether or not I would think that they should have cancelled it and just said, look, we're going to delay the game one more time, but we're going to launch it fully in the next gen, and that's going to be the first killer hit for the next generation. And unfortunately, it's not going to be backwards compatible. Like, it would suck to lose all of that revenue that would come in for them. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, that would be a consumer-focused decision rather than a corporate one.
Yeah, and it's like, I've got like multiple friends of mine saying, like, oh, should I buy it? And I'm like, well, here's all the caveats. It's like, yes, if you have a PlayStation 5, pretty much, but it's still going to crash. I mean, it crashes all the time, even on PS5. And then Andy Murray.
I've not had any hard crashes.
No, it's only on PS5. It doesn't even crash on Series X or Series S. It's some memory allocation issue on the PS5, and it's so annoying. And the PS4 version crashes more, but apparently it's to do with how it accesses different parts of the map, because the whole world is like a Dark Souls map. It's all one giant thing. It doesn't stop you for load screens. And apparently on the PlayStation side, just the way that hardware accesses assets, memory, whatever, it just overloads it on the PS4 and PS5.
You know what they should have done? Yeah, they should have rented the tech from Horizon Zero Dawn. Remember how they did that with the code technology thing? That was amazing.
If you want to see a really cool, if you search Horizon Zero Dawn loading and then go on Google Image, I guess there's probably a GIF of that.
Yeah.
And that game only loads what you're looking at. Everything else is completely de-res, which is cool. But yeah, that whole, you know, conversation around, like, do you think they'll actually fix the last gen one? I don't, unless they add loading screens, which I guess would kind of change the flow of it a lot.
I mean, I think that, like I said, when I was doing the review, they pushed out two patches. One was like a day zero patch, and one was one for the NVIDIA drivers and stuff like that. And those two jumped up the quality in terms of gameplay smoothness and also the graphical fidelity, like, by huge milestones. And tons of bugs were fixed within those two patches. Now, does that make me think that CD Projekt Red are going to be able to knock out these patches quickly? Yes, it does. I just hope that they're able to focus where it matters and not just go for the top end consumers, like the high end PC users and the PS5 and Xbox Series owners. I think they should be focusing on the PS4 and the larger install base, because that's their reputation has a greater stake in that Venn diagram.
Yeah, there was also a question from Phil Vanny Man, who just said...
man with Van, like it.
Vanny Man, who said, does CDPR hiding the poor performance of the PS4 / Xbox One versions change your opinion of the developer? How can this still be allowed to happen? Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's they sort of stake their reputation on being as open and honest as possible. And even when they were having the... And it's not like they're like... all nefarious individuals planning to plot against anybody. I still feel so sorry for the coding departments and the art departments to just try and get this over the finish line at all.
The way to think about it is how Jim Sterling put it, like, so succinctly and perfectly. At the end of the day, these are companies. They aren't your mates. As much as they would love to have this image of, let's go for a pint together and we can all have a laugh and I'll get this round, lad, sort of thing. That's just PR spin. At the end of the day, every company is like that. So it does hurt, because obviously it's like the image of that is broken further when stuff like this happens.
It feels like such an unprecedented thing too. Platforms.
I mean, we've seen it with Bethesda not giving review codes out until day of launch, hiding bad games. And yet to hype this up for like 8 years and then to do it at the last second, like
in the embargo, like we were looking through the embargo going like, oh, so does that, you had to email your contact. We had to look through it and be like, oh, so that means we can say this at this time, but we don't have access to this. Oh, why does it not mention consoles? Like, oh, okay. And then trying to clarify it and then being told like, well, you know, you can go live with this at this time, but we're going to hold this thing back.
But I think the main thing is that we're maybe forgetting is that they got it out. They're like, and I know that this is like not in the state that people want it to be in, but they actually managed to pull the trigger and get this gun to market. It is out there and now it can only get better. Yeah. Remember how many other games had disastrous launches and then were patched beyond oblivion and managed to become amazing things. I mean, like No Man's Sky is, and Witcher 3 again had tons of bugs. I mean, I think that everyone would have loved a smoother launch, but at the same time, I'm not trying to make excuses for it, but I'm just glad it exists. I'm glad it is here. There is a physical version of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, that was the whole thing with The Witcher 3. Obviously, there was the downgrade controversy. There was all the extrapolation, the philosophy of what a downgrade is. It's not just visuals. And CDPR made some really good points there, just saying, like, look, it's based on the hardware. We get it to look as good as we can. And then you're always optimizing as much as possible. So it's not technically a downgrade just because it looks worse, because it is still running very well. The frame rate is still good and there's detail there and everything else. And so, like, I get all that, but it's like there's not that much nuance to this particular thing without additional information. It fundamentally looks terrible on One S on the PS4. The resolution isn't there. The detail isn't there.
I mean, at some point, somebody made the executive decision to say, this is the date it's coming out. So whatever state it is in, you have had this long, this is it.
Yeah,
this
and we're going to restrict this from the review. So, like, they knew how this stuff was all going to look. Like, I said this in the news videos too. And it's just brass tacks. Like, you know, if you're a PR company, if you're a PR firm or a PR wing of a company, your job is to make that game look as good as possible.
Yeah,
and that means
course.
Maximizing review scores. That means minimize the negatives, accentuate the positives. Like, that is the job. Like, that's what they've done. And that's just cold business. I don't like it. I think it's really shady. But it's obvious what they've done, because then they get, and it's not like the PC version isn't a 5-star game. It totally is. The PS5 version is, when it works. There's a bunch of questions into here.
I know I keep derailing it to talk about this, but yeah, carry on. The take trough is overfilling. Let's dive in. Let's get our hands mucky.
No, it's okay. I mean, all the questions are around this subject matter anyway. The idea of, like, should they cancel it? Is it okay? Mm-hmm. Does it sour you on CDPR? Stuff like that. I think that someone was asking, Paul O'Brien was saying, is it worth getting on PS5 right now? Hell yeah. I think that it's brilliant when it works. There is that memory loading issue, which means that it crashes when you start going between different parts of the map, or if it's loading a story set piece or something like that. Not every time, but a lot. I had it crash about 9 times in my first 11 hours. It's sort of every hour-ish, because you would transition between a major area.
Right, okay.
Stuff like that. And it's annoying, it's infuriating. You lose progress, stuff like that. Hopefully that'll be one of the first things they patch, because it's not on the series versions. I think that it's a great game. It sucks that it's mired in all of this.
Do you think it's because it's the same architecture for PCs almost for Xboxes? That's why it's running smooth. Because again, I've not had a single hard crash, and I've gone to tons of different areas, and it's very, very fluid. And when I'm streaming it, I'm not running it on the highest graphical settings, because I want a smoother frame rate, and obviously the streaming software takes up a bit of oomph on the laptop as well. I'm not getting anything falling over itself.
No, the PC version and the Series X version especially seem to be pretty much perfect. There are certain glitches, like Bethesda style glitches of clipping and stuff, but it's nothing compared to how it just base looks on a 1S or a PS4. Yes,
it must be so infuriating though, if you're moving along and it's just, does it save your progress at all? Like any quick save stuff?
It's sometimes, I find that's quite unreliable. If you want to get a quick tip for anyone listening, is just hit pause, hit triangle for a quick save. I do that all the time now.
Yeah, every time I know that there's a fight coming up, I'm just going quick save just because I want to reload it and see if I could do it any other way.
There is that too. It's brilliant when it works. It's just that obviously a full-on crash, a full-on lockup is one of the most immediate ways you can get taken out of any particular scene. And if that happens there's a lot of pivotal story moments at the beginning as well. It thankfully didn't crash for me during those segments, but I have read about it happening to other people.
Right.
So a question from Andros, all this negative talk about graphics and the launch and everything, but no one's talking about the story. Most of the people are bashing the game because graphical purists, and they only care about frame rates, etc. Can someone just talk about how good the story is? Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
The story's very, very good.
really enjoying it. I really, really enjoy it. I think that the one of the strongest points is the story, because as I was saying to Scott before, when he got, I think it was on Wednesday actually, we talked about this, and it was about how the way that it delivers its narrative is really disjointed. It's full on. It's so overwhelming at first, and I absolutely love that. I can tell that there are going to be some people that are put off by it, because it's like the use of terminology, the requirement to read a lot of the shards that you pick up so that you can understand what's going on in the world around you, and it doesn't hold your hand. It basically says you have lived in Night City or have been alive in this world, and therefore you just understand what's going on. And I find that really refreshing, because I can't think of any other protagonist apart from maybe the courier from Fallout New Vegas that makes sense as to they don't like Fallout. I'm just gonna use the Fallout example a bit to explain better. In Fallout 3, you leave the vault, you go outside, you've never seen anything like that. Yeah, you go outside, and the first thing you do is you go and pick up bottle caps. No one tells you that that's the currency, but your character picks them up as a point of I'm going to use this as currency. It makes no sense for that character to do that. But in the Fallout New Vegas, you were a courier before and you got shot in the head, so you obviously understand how the world works. This game here, Cyberpunk, instills in you that you know this is the way that the world works. This is how people talk. This is how people act to one another. And you might not even understand the direct meaning of those terms, but you're drawn into it because everyone's speaking them with such confidence. You're like, oh yeah, and Eddie is just like, it's money. Like,
give
this,
me the
that,
deets.
Like,
I've got some beers. Let me go.
Biomods.
Exactly. The thing that I was really on the fence with going in was Keanu Reeves's performance, just because I think he can be quite hit and miss. Like, I love Keanu Reeves as a dude. He's obviously a very well-meaning dude, and I love him in John Wick, but I think a lot of his line delivery can sometimes be quite stilted and can be sometimes be quite monotone sometimes. It depends how he goes. And that bit in Point Break where he's like, sir, I eat the skin off chicken, and it's sometimes he just says random one-liners, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. He's actually absolutely, I can't swear they're brilliant. And I just think that as soon as you start hanging out with them, it totally clicks. And I love the persona that he has. Like Johnny Silverhand is this like rock star terrorist who's just done with everything. And once you start...
surprisingly aggressive, isn't he? Like to the point where like you don't expect to hear Keanu like this aggressive. You think that he's going to be like Bill and Ted, your mate, and chilling out, but he's not. He's not your friend.
And it's like they do a great scene with him. The very first scene with him is literally my moment of the year. I was just a geeky child just laughing, going, this is absolutely brilliant. Like just absolutely loving it with a backdrop of like synthwave music and what you're getting to do on screen and stuff like that. Absolutely loved that thing. But yeah, story-wise, you know, it has a massive prologue. It is like a 5 to 6 hour prologue. I played Street Kid, Jules played Corpo.
And I've also tried the Nomad Start Now as well. So between us, we actually have all of the three opening bits.
Cool, because it's like that opening bit, if you play Street Kid, it flies through the setup. Like you do this whole thing where you're taking a mission from a guy in a bar, you go to steal a car, and then Jackie's also stealing the car, and then it just sort of like does a montage where you're suddenly best mates with Jackie. You have met him the morning after you get arrested, but they introduce so many characters so quickly, and then none of them matter because you immediately get thrown into a different sort of thrust altogether. You're not doing missions for the bar guy anymore. Yeah. That stuff I found to be quite jarring, but it does line up with what you said about it just being like, no, you're pretty much a career mercenary, career criminal in many cases. You've been away to Atlanta, you're coming back, and of course people will be ringing you being like, oh, you're back, I've got a job for you, like I'm doing this. And it's weird because I think it goes back and forward on how confident that comes across versus overstuffed. Like, I don't know if Regina is ringing you 24/7, but Regina
all the time. She rings all the time. And like, you can understand why, because Night City is full of crime, man. Yeah. Like there is so much to take down. Like to the point where I was... last night I was like cleaning up this one bit for her, and I was like, right, whew, tough fight, job done, got the loot, gonna get out of there, hear gunshots going off, and I'm like, ah, go on then, I better go take them out. So you run over there, and then all of a sudden you see a car screaming past and they're shooting out the back, you're like, right, well I guess I've got to go follow that then and figure out what's going on.
The way that stuff all comes together is great. It took me a little while to get used to the progression system in regards to the one that's in the pause menu is nearly all percentage based, where it's like plus 20% evasion, you know, plus 10% bullet damage, and I was like, oh, this feels kind of lame. This feels like an MMO style progression. Where are my new abilities? But they're all with the Ripper Docs. It's just that you've got to go to them in the world. And they give you the first one when you hang out with Victor Vector.
They give you the first one for free.
And then, but after that, it's on you to make a point of going back to those Ripper Docs and combining the Ripper Doc unlocks with the progression system to customize your character on both sides, like new abilities and percentage based upgrades. Once that clicked, I was like, oh, I get it. Like I completely get it. I think they could have been a lot more elegant with that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I think that for considering that it's a 6-hour tutorial, they don't actually expressly tell you a lot about that side of it. You have to dive into it. It's very much a game that you get more the more you put in. Mm-hmm. And games like, I'm going to compare it to Minecraft, and I think that people will understand why, because Minecraft is deliciously simple, and so is this at its heart as to what you can do. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't tell you how to do it. You have to find out for yourself. But once you do, it's amazing. Like, I've only really been sort of delving into the crafting mechanics and stuff like that.
Right.
And the more you do with the crafting, the more you break down stuff, the better your skill gets in that. And it allows you to make more stuff and do other bits and bobs. And there's nothing better than being able to slide in behind cover, pop out your pistol, and then just go, wait a minute, pause, inventory, craft a quick healing kit, craft an accuracy booster thing, boom, 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 and then bang, shoot him in the head.
The thing that I love about the combat is that it took me a little while to sort of feel that I had a sense of
a
like
chunky
power.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. I love the weight too. I love how much the weapons kick. I kind of
bang, wish bang,
there were like more categories than just power, tech, and the whatever the smart one is.
Yeah, the smart one's cool.
Yeah, smart one where you can get bullets to sort of go around corners and stuff. But yeah, it is like super chunky. And I've just now, as of last night, I'm like 13 hours in. I finally have enough street cred where I can unlock the blade arms, the gorilla arms, like stuff like that. So I'm like looking forward to diving back into that. It is a slow rollout. But in terms of like main story beats, to obviously stay away from spoilers, where it goes after the 6 hours, like that's the most propulsive sort of thing that you get. But then it also splits into three separate branches, which I assume are the different endings.
Yeah.
Because it's, it seems like, you know, you're going to have a choice as to which direction you want to go, let's say, based on the scenario that appears at the end of the 5-6 hour thing, to keep it as vague as possible. But I guess as an overall quality thing, I love the story. I love the characters. I just want to hang out with Silverhand. I think that stuff is great. And then obviously the presentation, everything's brilliant.
I would say that the biggest recommendation that we can give to people is to play through that prologue mode.
Yeah.
Get that out of the way, because you don't lose anything from, you're introduced to a ton of side quests to begin with. Mm-hmm. And yes, some of them are useful and helpful, but at the end of the day, you can do all of them once you get through that prologue.
Yeah.
Just sit down, churn through it, because it's really interesting. It will get you engaged. It will set up things to make more sense and make you motivated to carry on going. Mm-hmm. And then boom, there you go.
We'll also say that, because I did that. I tried doing a bunch of missions. I was like, no, I'm just going to get through this. I want to get to the part where it fully opens up.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out that there are two missions where it says, go get your car back and go get your gun back. Both of them, the gun one, I think it's quite obfuscating. Like, you need to talk to the dude called Wilson, and it's in his inventory, but it's the only gun that's free.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Like, they should have just put that at the very, very top away from the rest of the inventory thing, because I actually ended up buying two guns that I was like, oh, is he just letting me choose
any gun,
which gun I want?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wait, no, it's actually this one here that has a specific name and costs zero. Yeah.
It's called like Night Cycle or Night
Long Night or something.
Long Night or something. That's the one that if you're playing that mission, that's what that one is. Same with the car thing. You need to go there, trigger the thing, make it, there's a whole thing with the car stuff. And then also when you go visit Cassius, the Ripper Doc, and it's like, oh, get your free upgrade. That's just buried in the hand augments. Yeah. It doesn't highlight it at all.
Again, it's just one of those things where all it needs to do is just have a little icon just displaying if something doesn't cost anything. But again, these are graphical things that they're going to get the feedback on and hopefully fix.
Yeah, I mean, Witcher 3's UI was completely overhauled. I think the amount of time it's been in development,
oh my
god,
do you remember the first one?
Yeah,
the first one was so confusing. You had to like mix all your potions before the battle and do all this and that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, I'm so glad that they fixed that for Witcher 2.
I think it's nuts that like that this has been in development this long, and then they've still released this thing that is so obfuscating. The UI is like, there's so many menus and submenus and different, you know, the way you edit your cyber deck and cyberware, and there's mods for every individual thing, like weapons and cyber augments and cyberware. And it's like, just like,
this is the thing. It sounds like we're like complaining. The sense is that there's so much stuff here, and a lot of it is amazing. The problem is you just have to dig through it to get to that stuff.
I mean, having done, like, I'm a huge like cyberpunk fan overall, and like the 2020 book is dense as hell. Obviously, it's a tabletop pen and paper RPG. So it's like, they're going to give you a million different options into how to spec your character, and I think they did quite a good job of getting that density across. It does just mean that it's an onslaught of information. You're trying to sort of hold it up in your mind. Very intense or serious question from Rodorus, who says, will we be talking about the representation representation of gender and trans people in the game. It's a conversation that needs to be had based on what I've seen from various outlets. I will say in this regard that obviously I don't think either of us are the authority to talk about trans representation. Like, I have friends that are trans, but I wouldn't mm-hmm. speak on their behalf. I still think that the stuff that I pick up on in regards to gender is that there is an undercurrent of misogyny, like, in the game.
Yeah.
However, I will say that, and it doesn't justify it at all, but it is in the source material. It's very late 80s cheese cringe of, you know, there are mutilated women left, right, and center. There are female strippers in every club. Like, yep. you can sleep with dudes. You can, you know, you can do that stuff, but it does feel like women can be set dressing sometimes.
There's just like, where you are. There's such a strange approach to sexualization in this game. I like, it's, again, to use the term, it's overwhelming because it's everywhere. Everything you look at has got some form of sexualization in it, be it the clothing, be it the adverts, be it the way that people talk to each other. And it's like,
a lot of dildos in the game, mate. A lot of dildos.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. It can be quite disgusting to see how humans treat each other in this game. Mm. But then you also have to, like, look at it. Is this CD Projekt Red in a like boneheaded maneuver, not seeing that a large portion of their fans mm-hmm. will be upset by the content and the display of how they put it into their game? Mm-hmm. Or is it them making a comment saying that this is the world that exists in cyberpunk, where corporations will sexualize anything, mm-hmm. everything, in order to get a sale? Neither one is okay. Because it's the same thing of, like, you either present the problem and are unaware of it, or you present the problem aware of it, but that means you've made a choice in order to display it as such. And I'm really confused by it myself, to be honest. I've read a few articles as to mm-hmm. what the problems are, what people are finding issues with. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that there are also counter arguments to them from within the same groups. And I'm very confused as to what the overall tone
is. It's a strange thing, because they, in terms of the way that the city they present, the tone that they present, like, they want to go down this whole, you know, a body is just meat. You just customize it, you hack it to pieces, you put it back together with different sort of synthetic augments and cyber augments and everything else, and all the different philosophies that come alongside that. And you can read into how that then becomes cyber psychosis, the idea that, but then that they are also the sub bosses.
But then we have the problem of, like, I completely understand where you're going from that within the narrative, but when you're doing, like, the character creator and it just gives you the two options of a masculine voice and a feminine voice, if they had just simply even just changed that to one or two, voice one or two, would that not have changed the entire tone of this?
Maybe. I mean, I did see, like, some people tweeting about, like, look, I feel so represented because I can have ostensibly, like, a female body with a male voice, and that there is a level of representation that I haven't seen in other character creators. So I think it is going to help some people. It is going to be, you know, it's going to feel oppressive and off-putting to others. The world that they create is definitely not one that you're supposed to be reveling in. Like, it is enjoyable aesthetically if you love cyberpunk fiction, but they... it's almost to the point where all the stuff that we just mentioned about the menus, the systems, the upgrades, the character, everything about how oppressive it feels to be in this city is entirely intentional, because they have a really touching scene where you go inside this club, you're meeting up with a different contact, and you have this whole scene where V sort of doesn't break down but opens up and says, like, look, I don't want to go back out there. Like, I just want intimacy. I just want to be away from this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's almost a get out of jail card if you wanted to play it that way, because they're just saying, look how horrible all of this abuse of bodies is, and mentalities is, and philosophies are, and don't you wish you could just turn it off? Like,
that's the perfect expression, is that Night City is like a sugar rush for the senses. Everything is dialed up beyond it's like to offensive levels. Everything is, like, offensive is the right word. The colors, the presentation of, like, everything is over the top, and it's like, imagine trying to live inside a sugar rush experience. It would be draining. You would feel completely empty. There is no soul. There is no, like, love within this city whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it leaves you as a hollow person. Yeah. Like, and that's, like, no one is a good person in this. Like, well, look around, even if you want to try and, like, champion V as being this changer and shaper of the entire city, you still are a mercenary who kills people for money.
Yeah,
no one wears a white hat in this.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, I think that that's all going into their overall comment on, you know, losing humanity to synthetic means, whether that's augments or whether that's technology or stuff like that. That's obviously a separate conversation to the trans representation, the way that they approach, like, you know, putting a trans body on an advert and that kind of thing. But then that again folds into the way that, like you said, they're trying to make it so that corporations have got so carried away with abusing as many different body types as possible. So It's a whole thing. I think it's effective. I think it's producing responses, which assumedly is what they wanted at the core. Like, they are creating something to provoke a response, an artistic fueled response.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very
But it's just whether or not that's the right means to go about it, or if it's even the right message to be saying, because you're effectively providing people evidence with this is an acceptable thing to do, and it's not an acceptable thing to
do. I think I'm looking forward to sort of exploring a lot more of the overall map just to see what else I can find. It was just that occasionally, like I said, having seen so many, like I said, on the misogynistic side, like seeing so many women strewn about, hacked to pieces, serial killers are nearly always killing the women. And like, you know, you go into a club and there's women dancers everywhere and stuff like that. And I'm like, I get it. That's what your subject matter was. And the way that Johnny Silverhand talks, where he randomly refers to, I think it's Judy. He's like talking about different qualities about her. And then he's like, 6 out of 10. And it's like, okay, dude. Sure.
But again, you're not meant to like anyone though.
And that's the thing. The more you delve into Silverhand's thoughts, the more you literally get told that he hates everything and everyone, and he's sick of the city and he literally wants to bomb it. So like, there is all that. Like, you're not supposed to get on board with any of these things. But yeah, I think that'll be one of the biggest, most fascinating conversations to pick apart going forward, especially as, you know, I hope that more trans authors and stuff get stuck in and start talking about it from their point.
It'll be interesting. I'm enjoying the fact that that the pressure is being applied now. These are the right questions. These are the right things to stand up for. So it's up to CD Projekt Red now to actually define what their tone and intent was.
Yeah, because it is like a really, like you said, because of all the terminology and the nomenclature and all that kind of stuff, there is an insanely cheesy edgelord tone that, like, personally, as a huge synthwave fan, like, in music-wise, I can go with, you know, Neon Skies and everyone referring to business as biz and, like, you know, give me the deets and, like, all that kind of stuff. I can go with that to a certain point. I think at some point it does just feel like, oh, God, that line read was a bit weird or whatever. But they are committing to it 110%, like, to the point where they want to have a city that feels oppressive. You know, they want to have corporations that are completely devoid of humanity, etc. As a much nicer question, or a much easier question, one from Daniel Shalito, how many people pick this up for Wholesome Keanu? How much were you looking forward to Keanu's performance?
I was really looking forward to his performance, and I feel like his personal PR of being like, no, you're breathtaking, and being really charming and happy and really like selling it as like the nicest experience with you and your robotic armed mate.
Of course.
I won't again spoil the story or anything like that, but just your expectations are going to be shattered. So Wholesome Keanu is a thing that exists outside of cyberpunk.
Wholesome Keanu is the real Keanu. Johnny Silverhand is maybe the most antagonistic, like, a-hole character he's ever done. But I think he's enjoying doing it, though. I think he enjoys getting to sort of do that stuff. As a general wrap-up thing, just between me and you, what's your I guess give me sort of a general opinion on where you're at right now, the amount of time you've invested, and or maybe something you did in the city that you thought was cool.
I mean, I've invested a hell of a lot of time into this. Like, I keep going back. I keep wanting to play it because of the fact that it's properly hooked me. There's so much to do and explore and see, and there's so many amazing vistas to just look around and be like, oh, that's interesting. You can see how this is influenced differently in terms of architecture to this place. Like, how has this come to be? Why is this tiny shop here? Great, and I think that there's so much personality in the world that I absolutely love. I love the random outbursts of violence, the people that are just like, it's almost like a bubbling pot that's threatening to overspill at any point. And I think that sense of danger is present throughout the entire game. So and you know what? I'm actually really impressed by the sword play.
Okay.
Like, I wasn't like super keen on using a melee build, but then I found like the katana and I was just like going around just like using it. I was like, oh, this is actually really fun. It's got a really like chunky sense of weight when you twat somebody with it.
I like the charge attacks and stuff, because you can start to, I forget which one of the million trees it's in, but you can spec so that you absolutely knock dudes out with your heavy attack with the katana. And I unlocked the aerial drop kill as well.
That's amazing fun, that is.
Also unlocked a thing where it's like you can throw daggers, like you're supposed to hold L2 and then press R2 to throw daggers. I can't get that to work at all. I don't know.
I haven't used it yet.
It doesn't tell you how to do it. It tells you to push those buttons, and in the video, it seems like V is unequipped with anything else. But like, when I do that, R2 is just a heavy attack. So I don't
I think what you've got to do is you've got to equip a short knife in your melee slot, and then you can throw that and it sticks in the person and you can pick it back out again.
That makes perfect sense. I think for me, I had like a shift in sort of like the power, the feeling of like agency in that world where, which kind of, you know, if this is all intentional, is pretty genius, because like we mentioned before about like V's agency is that they're coming in from Atlanta, they're returning to the city and they're sort of picking up old contracts and getting used to stuff again. And that's obviously how you feel as the player. You're sort of overwhelmed, but you're figuring it out. And then a couple of nights ago or last night, I picked up like a sniper rifle, but I swapped one of the scopes on it. So it's just this big old ridiculous oversized rifle that does like 800 damage, which is ridiculous, but up close. So like every time I got jumped at in a parking lot last night when I was walking between missions, these like guys just like, they were on my radar, but then they were like, hey man, hey you. And then like, they just alerted. And I was like, oh, well, guess here I go killing again. Yeah. I just like busted out my giant rifle, whipped around, double tap to dash, kicked it in slow motion and just blasted two of their heads off.
Nice.
And like, yeah, this is pretty much the best feeling ever. Like I was proper John Wick style when he's like, well, I guess I'm back. Like this is just full on, let's just do it.
There's a sense of empowerment in the game that comes through the combat and especially in the dialogue as well. If you can talk yourself into a fight and then just absolutely wreck shop afterwards, it's such a good feeling.
That you could approach more gangs on the side missions through dialogue, because I've taken quite a lot of side missions where it's
haven't looked through the skill trees, but is there not any like intimidate ones where you can basically be like, stand down, and they'll just be like,
it's more like body or reflexes tends to factor in, but like you don't even get the opportunity to broach a conversation. Like sometimes you'll go to a question mark on the map and then you'll get there and then your fixer will tell you what the mission was and you're like, okay. And then you'll get the like the hurried through briefing of like, oh, by the way, there's actually a hostage in there and you're supposed to get them out. And then I then try talking to someone who was on the door of that building, but they just alerted and shot me anyway. So it's like, okay. I mean, maybe they're just that hostile, but I was kind of hoping I could be like, hey, can I get in there? Because I've got like a
I absolutely love using stealth in the game as well. Just like distracting the enemies, sneaking by them, using them. And I've upgraded my gun now, so it does non-lethal bullets. So now it fires like stun pellets effectively and it'll hit them and they'll be like, ah, like then they're like, what the hell? And then just be like, oh, ow, ow. Okay, that actually does hurt quite a lot.
That's cool. Because I saw certain bounty missions, like when you go after the cyber psychos and stuff,
you've got to keep them alive.
You can. I killed one of my dudes accidentally because I just threw like 20 grenades because the dude went on the corner behind a dumpster. So I was like, I'm just going to grenade the hell out of you. Yeah. And then one of my fixers rang and was like, you're supposed to keep her alive. But it didn't seem to matter too much. But I like that there's dialogue that reflects that and that you can make yourself non-lethal if you want to. Kind of begs the question if you can do the whole thing as a pacifist.
I think you can. I think that up until a certain point after the prologue, once you lose, let's just say, the helping hand that you get, that's when you start getting the upgrades that allow you to turn your guns into stun ones, non-lethal ones, and you get much more non-lethal takedowns. There are some scenes in the opening prologue that are forced action segments, but after replaying them, I managed to get through them without firing a single shot.
Interesting.
You can let your any partner that you have or have like any support, you can let them do the work. There's only one scripted event that I do think that you might have to kill people. Okay. But that's as one that I can't say. So
we're going to continue obviously playing it. It is the big game for the end of the year. We might end up doing this. Might also be our subject matter next week, depending on what else happens.
Well, you're not here. This is the last one.
No. We're doing one more next week.
Oh, one more next week.
I'm gone. I'm here next Friday. Okay. For one more UBP, and then I'll be away. But yeah, let us know what you think of Cyberpunk. And obviously, this is only on the audio side of things, so come find us on social media. Thank you very much for sending in all your questions. And just let us know what you'd like us to tackle this time next week. For now, this has been the Untitled Banter Pod. I've been your host, Scott Tailford.
UBP. Thank you very much.
Module skill.
Thank you. Cheers.
Catch you next time. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.